We're heading over now to Nashville, Tennessee, and we're going to speak to Tony Mantor. You are in Nashville, Tony, is that right?
That's correct, Nashville, Tennessee.
Just checking. What's it like? What are the restrictions in Nashville at the moment? Because I can imagine that, Nashville's very much a big tourist place, isn't it?
Yes, we've had just like everyone else in the world, shutdowns and lockdowns, and they just started to open up the Opry a little bit more where people could come in.
Yeah.
But now we're having spikes again, so a lot of your places down on Broadway where everybody goes to see the tourist attractions there. They're either shut down or limited amount of people. It's affected us quite bad. And at times there, if you drive down through, it seemed like a ghost town.
Yeah. Tell us, I'm really one of my places on my list to go. I'm a big Johnny Cash fan. I'm a big country fan. There's a Johnny Cash museum I want to go to. What else in Nashville that is worth a visit?
Oh, you've got, of course, the Grand Ole Opry.
Yeah.
You've got the Ryman downtown.
Yeah.
You've got Legends. There's several places down there. You've got the Hall of Fame. There's several good places for people to see when things open back up again.
I want to ask you as well, is it the Bluebell Cafe where they do a lot of...
Yeah, the Bluebird. The Bluebird Cafe.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I'm definitely, it's on my bucket list to go, definitely. I've been to Los Angeles. I want to go to Nashville and then maybe try and get New Orleans and Memphis in as well.
You'll like it because Memphis has got Elvis, so that's worth a trip. You truly enjoy it. It's come in the summertime.
Yeah,
you know, that way you don't have to worry about the weather.
Absolutely. What about you, Tony? How did you get into this industry? Because it seems like from an outsider's point of view, that I know there's lots of other things happening in Nashville, but because it's such a music orientated city, how did you get into working there?
Well, back when I was a singer-songwriter myself, trying to do the record deals like everybody else in the world, I had a couple of friends of mine that were country songwriters that needed transportation in Nashville, and I at the time was more on the pop side, the Eagles style of music. So I agreed to come down and bring them down. And when I got down here, I was quite surprised. Nashville was really quite friendly, easy to work with people, just a complete different atmosphere than some of the bigger cities like New York or LA. And so I enjoyed coming down. And then we was doing a session, and the piano player didn't show up. And the guy asked me if I would do it, and I did. And then that led to me being in front of a guy that worked with Ronnie McDowell. And Ronnie at the time needed a background singer and a piano player.
Wow.
So I wound up touring with him. And then from there, I just started doing more of my recording here in Nashville as an artist. And then I wound up working with several people that were deep into the business and knew a lot of people and had a lot of big hits and major records out that they had either produced or sang on. And they kind of talked me into moving to Nashville and getting into production development. So I did that in 93.
Yeah.
And went in the background, got off the stage, got off the road, and wound up doing production development. And then my Plateau Music Production Development Company in 2005 turned into an independent record label where I released singers and took them to radio and promoted them. And then I started managing their careers. And here I am 27 years later, still doing it.
Now, I've got to ask, is it dog-eat-dog in the music industry there? Because I watched in the Nashville TV series, and I know there's a lot of drama in there. It's a bit like Dallas, the TV series Dallas, based in Nashville. But is there an element of that in the music industry there?
There is. I mean, everybody's competing for that same spot. It's like I tell people, When you're trying to shoot for the top 40 of Billboard or Media Base or any of those major charts, There's only 40 people there. You've got to in order to get into that top 40, you've got to replace someone.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be backstabbing or evil to do it, but it's very competitive. You've got to get out there and try and do your thing. And then hopefully you get radio that likes you and you get the people within the industry that likes you and likes what you're doing. And then hopefully that just keeps moving so that you move upward and then you're out there competing with the big boys, as they say.
And how easy is it then, because we're going to play your song in a moment as well, looking forward to this. Tony, how easy is it to kind of gauge where a song's going to go? I'm watching a documentary recently on Roy Orbison, and he obviously wrote a lot of his own songs, and he wrote Only the Lonely, and he went to his friend in Nashville, producer, and his producer friend said, this is going to be massive, and it was. And yet there are times where I think when some great songs kind of, there's a lot of luck involved, isn't it? It just seems to go by the wayside, and then some, well, let's just say questionable songs seem to make it to number one in the charts. So,
yeah, that's true. There's a lot of unfortunately, there's a lot of politics in the business.
Yeah,
they it's who you know, what they do, how they like you, what they see for you, and sometimes great songs will recorded by someone that's not a superstar or major entertainer that's well known,
yeah,
can get kind of pushed aside, and a song that's not quite as good because a person's well known will make it. It's kind of like a long time ago when Elvis was still alive, I made comments that Elvis could cut anything and it wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah,
they would, his fans would love it and it would go straight to the top, and that's because he's had such a following, and radio realized that, so they didn't want to take and not have people not listening because they weren't playing.
Yeah.
So much of that is true today. You've got a lot of the stars that out there that have such a major following and they do so well that radio would be foolish not to play them. Although there are some stations that still don't play certain stars because they don't. But overall, most of them do, and that's kind of how the business works.
And I get a little bit fed up with all this kind of we like to categorize music. I think with all due respect, America do it a little bit more maybe than anywhere else. But where, like you mentioned earlier on, that you know you weren't really doing country, but you were doing Eagles. And I'm a big country fan, but I'm also a massive Eagles fan as well. And there is this overlap, isn't there? Elvis sang country, but sang rock and roll, and it's. I was listening to Jimmy Buffett say a while ago that, you know, people said to him, well, you're not country. But then there were country people that were listening to him. He'd be on the country music channels. And it just seems to be, you know, the bottom line is a great song's a great song. And if people like it, they're going to buy it, aren't they?
You hope that. Because what happened is if you go back to the 70s, you had multi-format stations here, yeah, in the country that you could hear everything but country, unless it was a country crossover. So you could hear Joan Baez, you could hear Roy Orbison, you could hear the Eagles, you could hear Elvis, and then later at night you'd hear the more heavier Led Zeppelin or, yeah, or you know, Aerosmith. That doesn't happen anymore because they've sectionized a lot of radio to where they call it, it's an R&B station, or it's a pop station, or it's an oldie station, and that's all you hear. I truly miss the stations that where you could hear the different styles of music all on the same station, but it, yeah, still comes down to, and I think that's where I think that's where the Eagles and Roy Orbison and a lot of even Bob Seger and artists like that were more rock and roll towards the end of their careers became more country because their fans. Because when they started sexualizing radio and they took it so that radio was this or this or this, they started pushing. That's when the heavy metal Van Halen and those type of bands came out, and they started taking over the airwaves, and they started pushing all these people to listening to more country stations. And then the country stations had to take and play to them. So that's when they started playing the Eagles, Bob Seger, yeah, some of their lighter stuff that could cross over into country. And that's when country started changing. So that would be like, you know, mid 90s to late 90s that you saw country start to make a change in what they called country.
Yeah, and to me, it's a shame because we can just be kind of reinforcing our taste in music and never been exposed to anything else. We in the UK we have Radio 2 and what on a BBC radio station, national radio station. Right. 1 minute you'll have the Carpenters, next minute you'll have Led Zeppelin, and then Aerosmith, and it's just
I love that.
Yeah, it's just and actually most people because most people do go across the you know, I can be into, well, I'm into listening to some country today. Next, I'm into a bit of soft rock, and then I'm into some R&B the next day. And that's how it is.
Absolutely. I mean, I've been working on my own personal CD all year long. And I've got, two or three songs on it that could be considered country. This new one that I've got out, which is one. Yeah. But it didn't start that way. It started out just me doing music that I liked. And then adding a few things to add texture to it, then all of a sudden people started saying, oh, this is country. It's really not country, but it crosses over to where it can be country because I got a steel in it. Yeah. and did different things. So, but the Eagles had steel back in the 70s, you know, and they weren't considered country. You know, so it just, I guess it comes down to what people like and what they want to define it as.
Yeah, Dr. Hook, I think, were another band that were pretty good at kind of drifting between the two.
The Bellamy Brothers, they did the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And so with this new, I mean, let's just talk a little bit about Plateau Music, because I'm sure a lot of us who are music fans will probably play songs and will really be quite superficial. I like the song, I like the singer, I might even like the music video, but I don't really know what the record producer is or the history behind it. Is it a case that a lot of people know songs that you would have, but probably wouldn't know, the labels aren't seemingly as big as they used to be, and I'm trying to be respectful when I say that to you about that.
Oh, sure. The independent record label has become a little bit more of a force than it used to be.
Yeah.
I mean, back if you go back to the 50s and the 60s when Johnny Cash and all those icons of country were starting out, they started out on Sun Records or you know, smaller record labels, and then eventually wound up on the majors. And then over the years, the majors started taking over. And then in the 90s, the major labels started selling. And then it wasn't too long before you went from 25 to 30 major labels down to four or five. They had all come under one or two or three umbrellas, and it changed that drastically where they control the market. Well, now with the internet and with everything that's available, where people can go out and see and hear new music that they can't hear because of what's going on in the industry, it has given the independent a little bit more arm to compete. Not on the radio level, but on the internet and on iTunes and different platforms like that. And that's why in 2005, Plateau Music went from a production development company into an independent label because I saw the opportunity to put some of my singers out there and compete at radio stations and get them in the charts and start to develop them towards the careers that they wanted to do.
Do you have to fight harder for the exposure? You know, big record companies, you know, they buy their way in, they've got, you know, money to burn. Well, they may used to have money to burn, I'm not sure anymore. So does that make you have to work harder?
Absolutely. I tell all my singers that I work with that if we have a great song that would be a top 10 or a top 20 song with a major artist, we have to work that much harder to make it that much better.
Yeah.
In people's eyes, and then because of their ears, so that we can compete against what's out there. So that way, if you hear a Keith Urban and then you hear my song, or you hear a Sam Austin song that I produce, or whoever I might produce, the quality level does not drop. The only difference is it goes from a major label to an independent, back to a major label, probably.
Just talking about the genres again, I was listening to, came across it on YouTube, Alice Cooper saying that he used to play golf with Glenn Campbell. And Alice Cooper said that he rated Glenn Campbell as one of the greatest guitarists of all time. And
absolutely.
And that kind of really shows you how great musicians go across any genres. And I know you have worked with Debbie Campbell, Glenn's daughter. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I, a couple, 3 years ago, right before Glenn passed away, we was working on a tribute album for Debbie to pay tribute to Glenn. And unfortunately, he died before we could finish it. Wow. But then after she got her mind wrapped around that she was ready to finish it, we got in there and we finished it, and we've been promoting it, you know, ever since. But really good talent, very smooth vocal. Yeah. She's just a really nice person, and she decided that wanted to pay tribute to her father, and she goes out there and performs and pays tribute. So it worked out well.
What is it about the industry that you're in? What point in your working year do you stand there and think, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing?
What does it for me is when I'm working with a singer and I'm producing them and I'm able to show them how to make themselves better, how to help their vocal, how to use their diaphragm, how to use different nuances to put the passion across so that people understand that this is an important song or an important line. When we first start, and then when we finish that song and they're mixing it, one time I worked with a singer that really didn't change her all that much. I just changed her approach and attitude on the way that we perceived the song. And we were listening to it right before we were getting ready to mix down. And she had just got married. And so she was listening to the song that we produced. And she looked at me and she goes, "I just can't believe that's me." And her husband said, "Yeah, but I sure do like the new you." You know, so when you hear people say that and they understand that you've made them better and you've given them opportunity and the creativity in which we approach it, you know, even if they don't go all the way to number one, like I always tell people, that if they get out there, they perform, they enjoy what they're doing, and people see they enjoy what they're doing, they create fans.
Yeah.
And they might not have hundreds of thousands of fans, but they have a lot of fans. And to those fans, they're number one.
Yeah.
They don't have to be number one in Billboard or number one in any major chart. They are number one to those fans that like them. So you just keep putting out the best you can do, make it the best, and then hopefully people hear it and they like what you're doing, they become a fan, and it just continues to grow.
I love that what you say about the voice there, because obviously under lockdown, I think we've been more reliant on music than ever before in our lives, just to kind of bring us a bit of nostalgia maybe, and just to bring that kind of reassurance and to uplift us. But listening to Elvis the other day and just the emotion in his voice, I think, is one of the real keys to his success. And when somebody sings with emotion, you almost feel like he's singing this out of experience, out from the heart. That really comes across, doesn't it?
It does. I like visual songs. Yeah. I like lyrics that you can close your eyes, listen to the singer, and as long as the singer has got the passion for that song and really delivers the lines and you can sit back and listen to it, eyes closed, and visualize that whole scene that's being sang. You know, if you can get that across, then that's why we do it, because to grab a hold of a listener and have them listen to the song, and you might have a certain perception of what it means, but they might have a completely different perception, and then it affects them or helps them in their life or helps them out of a bad situation or whatever. That's why we do it, because it's always nice to hear from people that say, "Oh man, I listened to your song and I needed that today."
Absolutely.
You know, so it hit them, it affected them, and when you get that, you know, there's nothing better.
Absolutely. Well, unfortunately, I could be chatting with you all afternoon, Tony, because, you know, as you can tell, it's a passion of mine as well. But unfortunately, we're out of time because we've got to get a lot more in before the top of the hour. But tell us about this song. We're going to play it as we conclude with you now, Tony. Why Not Me?
Why Not Me came to me April of this year. I was working on my own personal CD just for enjoyment, something to give to friends, family, you know, kids, grandkids. And it was a song of hope and never giving up on your dream. I heard that And I said, this is what I've been doing for the last 8, 10, 15 years, is telling people, hey, never give up. You're never too old. It doesn't matter when it happens. It only matters that it happens. I heard the song, and I told the songwriter I wanted to cut it. I did cut it. And then promoters that I work with around the world and here in the U.S. heard it. And they said, you got to release this song. It's so positive. It's so uplifting. It's what we need now in this, in what's going on in the world. So I decided that if I was going to release it, that I had to do it in a way that would help people. So I decided to give a large portion of any downloads of the song to charities that support the first responders, the emergency call, the operators, the police, the firemen, the EMTs, paramedics. They all need our help because they're going through a rough time right now.
Yeah.
So I figured, you know, they help us, so why not help them if we can?
Well done, Tony. Really appreciate that. And here we go. Tony, thanks for coming on. If anybody wants to find out more about you and what you're doing, is there a place online they can go?
Sure, they can find me on Facebook, Tony Mantor.
Yeah.
They can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and then, of course, I've got my website, Plateau Music, and then I've got my personal website, TonyMantor.com.
Right, I'm going to come and see you in Nashville, Tony, soon.
All right. Great.
Take care, Tony. Have a good day. Take care.
All right, thanks.
Cheers. Bye-bye.